From WIPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Once you leave the supportive embrace of school, pursuing music can pose hurdles. Whether it's playing an instrument or singing, how do you make time for rehearsals? Should you take lessons? And if you do, how to find the right teacher? How do you avoid physical strains and cope with performance nerves? Yet thousands of adults pursue it because they love it. Baltimore native Amy Nathan surveyed hundreds for her new book, Making Time for Making Music. One is Liz Sog, a data specialist by trade, violinist for love.
Music is one of the most beautiful fabrics in our universe. So I'm happy to just be able to join in to play pieces that were composed hundreds of years ago and that are still just some of the finest works of art.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Max Weiss, editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine, can't remember when music, playing the cello, was not part of her life. In college, she double majored in music and literature. As she graduated, she realized her future probably lay in the world of words.
I almost liken it to an athlete who played college sports. But then maybe you're not quite good enough to go to the pros, you pursue a different career. But I had always taken lessons. And it just seemed I couldn't really imagine my life without taking cello lessons. So I found a local teacher who had been recommended to me, started taking lessons. But I think in a way I had a little tiny bit of ambivalence about it, like, why am I doing this? And the teacher, unfortunately, really had that ambivalence. And at some point he sort of looked at me and he said, "You're not looking to become a professional, right?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Then why are you continuing to take lessons?" And I felt very sort of abashed by that. It sort of seemed like tough love in a way. And it really turned me off playing for a little while. I thought, you know, he's right. Why am I still playing? Just because I always played when I was a kid. What's my role as a musician now if I'm not going to be a professional musician?
Weiss counts herself lucky. Before long, her sister Felicia, an accomplished pianist, invited her to play chamber music. And with violinist Renee Roberts, we're hearing them now, they play as the Doghouse Trio.
I started seeing that people, all these adults around me, were playing music, finding it so edifying, getting so much gratification out of playing music, and many were taking lessons because they wanted to be as good as something that they loved and were passionate about as they could possibly be.
Max Weiss is one of scores of musicians who came to music or came back to performing music as adults who are quoted in a new book titled Making Time for Making Music, How to Bring Music into Your Busy Life. It's written by Amy Nathan, an amateur pianist and choral singer who grew up in Baltimore and has written other books about music. Amy Nathan joins us from Argo Studios in New York. Welcome to On the Record.
Well, thanks for having me.
To write this book, you've sent out hundreds of questionnaires to musicians who are not professionals. How did you find them, and what did you ask them?
Yes, well, I found them by contacting music schools and music ensembles that I found out about by doing some research and summer camps for music. There are wonderful summer camps for music. And the Baltimore Symphony was very helpful. They have a wonderful program for amateur musicians, and they put me in touch with a lot of their people. Peabody was very helpful. And it was an online questionnaire, so people could just fill it out on their own time online and could keep going back to it. And they were just remarkable in their openness in filling out this questionnaire and telling me, you know, all about their musical journeys, which were sometimes very complicated, like Max's was. And And they were also very willing to give advice to others who might want to follow in their footsteps.
Describe this pool of people. There were almost 275 who filled out the entire questionnaire, right?
Yeah, there was, altogether more than 350 worked on the questionnaire. Some completed it, most completed it, but some didn't. And others I interviewed by phone, people that I found out about through other ways after I had already started on the questionnaire. And then I interviewed dozens of music educators and music researchers and a few professional musicians. So altogether, 441 people had helped with providing information and advice for this book.
And these are mostly retired people, young people,
singers? No. Most of them were still working. They ranged in age from 25 to 96. Two-fifths of them had retired, but the others were still working. Nobody was working as a professional musician. There were a few music teachers. And about half of them were returnees to music who had given it up for a while and then came back to it. A third of them had made music all through their adult life, from childhood on, with no major breaks. And a third of them were total newcomers. Either they were adding on something totally new that they had never done as a child, or they had never really done much with music as children and were just total newcomers to music.
Mostly singers? Mostly instrumentalists?
Most of them were instrumentalists, although a quarter of them did both instrumental and vocal music. A third of them were choral singers.
Talk to me about socioeconomic class. Is performing as an adult essentially something for the affluent?
Well, I think music is an expensive hobby for anyone, for kids as well. Although Baltimore is lucky to have ORC Kids, which is this wonderful program that provides free music lessons for youngsters in underserved communities. And actually, one of the people interviewed in the book was recommended to me by ORC Kids. Yes, it's an expensive hobby. Singing is probably the least expensive. You don't have to buy an instrument. But there are new programs for adult musicians. It's a program called New Horizons, which is geared to people age 50 and older, and very modest fees. And they build the instruction right into the ensemble. So they put you right into an ensemble. The first day, they teach you a couple of fingerings on the violin, and you're making music. And then they work the instruction into the ensemble. There are also very inexpensive choruses called encore choruses that are all over the D.C., Baltimore, Virginia area, which are, but buying an instrument is expensive, and buying lessons, paying for lessons is expensive. But only about half of the people were taking lessons at the time that they filled out the questionnaire. Now, some of them may have taken lessons as adults earlier, but they felt they had learned enough and didn't have to keep on with lessons.
You call this a different kind of advice book. Different in what way?
Well, the advice doesn't come from me. The advice comes from all the people in the book who are quoted and who shared their stories in the book. And it also isn't like some advice books would say, well, this is the 10 top tips, or these are the 10 best summer programs. I just share the information and the advice that they give in telling about their lives, and then also in advice that they would offer to others who want to get into music.
That's author and amateur musician Amy Nathan here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her new book, Making Time for Making Music, about adults who take up music or return to it after they've put it aside, sometimes for decades. And let me pull one of those returners into the conversation. Liz Sogg is here in the studio with me. She studied violin as a child, but put it aside as she grew up busy with a career as a statistician. She is now data specialist, academic services assessment and analysis in Homewood Student Affairs at Johns Hopkins University. And she's also a wife and mother. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
When did you start playing the violin again?
So it was when my youngest went to kindergarten. I have three children, and the older two are struggling through their lessons and struggling to practice. My younger one did keep running up to me and trying to hold my big violin. So I needed to get him a little violin, get him going. And I did decide my kids were just having all the fun. I needed to start taking some lessons again and get some of my own interests back, some of my own time where I could be, say, I don't want to be interrupted. I'm doing my thing now.
So it was, it wasn't so much that you needed to be a role model for them as that you thought you would enjoy it as much as they would.
Yeah, it was both. I wanted to model practicing that it's not torture. And I also did want to enjoy, just I felt like they were having fun and I would have more fun.
Amy Nathan, children, from the stories that you heard, do they more often keep would-be musicians from having time for music, or are they an inspiration?
Well, I think it goes both ways. I was really impressed with people like Liz and other parents of some with parents of very, very young children who were determined to keep music in their life. Some of them, like Liz, felt that something was lacking and that they needed to go back to that part of their life that they had put on hold while they were having children. One woman who's I have a picture of her in the book, who was playing in her community band concert. And there's a picture of her after the concert with her, I think, 3-year-old daughter and her 2-week-old son and holding her bassoon. And she just was determined that she was going to keep on. And she did it by keeping up with bands that play pretty easy music, so she doesn't really have to practice much. But she said when she goes to band practice once a week, that's her time for herself. And she can just forget all the pressures of being adult, children, jobs, household chores. She's also a nurse practitioner, so she's pretty busy in the hours when she's not at band practice.
Liz Song, how do you make time to practice?
So I have become an empty nester. My youngest did play his viola through high school orchestras and brought it to college with him. So I do actually have a lot more time now, and I'm loving it. I'm, you know, in several small chamber ensembles, and the Hopkins Concert Orchestra is my main orchestra. But when it was more of a challenge, I did all sorts of things, like put chicken pieces in the oven to roast with the carrots, onions, and potatoes right in the pan, and it could stay in the oven a solid hour. And then I could, you know, get a couple other things prepared quickly and still have, you know, 45 minutes even or half an hour to practice on my own. So one of my favorite times was probably right before dinner when the kids were all home and so forth.
Before dinner? That surprises me.
Well, I'm not the best cook.
Amy Nathan, what other tricks did you learn from your musicians about how they squeeze practice in?
Well, some of them do it before, first thing in the morning, so that even if the rest of the day is a disaster, they've at least gotten a little bit of music in. Some people do it very, very late at night. And for some instruments, it's possible to make your instrument silent so you can practice after spouse or children are asleep. People just used all different kinds of strategies. One woman was in a very difficult position, and her husband, she was a singer, and her husband could not stand the sound of her hitting her high soprano notes. There was just something about that pitch that just irritated his ears. So she would go and practice at a nearby church.
So sometimes you just have to take it someplace else.
Right, right. I used to practice when I went back to piano for the same reason that Liz did. My sons were taking piano lessons, and I thought, wow, they're having all the fun, and they had such a wonderful teacher that I started taking lessons with her. And so I would drive them to their saxophone and trumpet lessons at a nearby music school, and I would find an empty practice room and just go practice my piano while they were having their lesson.
Well, speaking of time, we need to take a quick break here on The Record. And when we're back, more about the challenges and joys of making time for making music. We're listening to Liz Song playing in a quartet from the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra Academy, coached by BSO violist Karen Brown, with violinist Ravid Boger and cellist Nancy Bridges. They're playing an arrangement of Schindler's List by John Williams. I'm Sheila Cass. Keep listening.
Thank you.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Polling data indicates that a majority of adults in the U.S. who don't play a musical instrument wish they did. Amy Nathan points out a gap between aspiration and actuality. She has surveyed hundreds of amateurs who do play and sing and compiled their insights and advice into a new book, Making Time for Making Music, How to Bring Music into Your Busy Life. And she's with us from Argo Studios in New York. Here in studio with me is Liz Sogg, who studied violin as a child and returned to it when her own children started taking music lessons. Liz, you have participated in programs the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra organizes for amateurs. Amy Nathan mentioned those earlier. Tell us about them.
Well, the BSO Academy is a wonderful program that uses the professional musicians to coach amateurs. It's an intensive week where you're also getting lectures on all sorts of things, from not being nervous and you're, you know, dealing with pain and health issues, to other more just interesting things about music, like what makes music sound pleasant versus dissonant. Anyhow, some of the science of music is what was one of the lectures recently. Out of that does come several rehearsals with pros. Some of the rehearsals are side by side with pros, and then at least three performances. So this year they unbundled their packages, and I chose to just do a quartet, like a very small group. And I had my three coachings, a dress rehearsal, and then we performed Wednesday night. Then the next thing coming up is Artscape, which runs just half a week from Thursday to Sunday.
Right, that's coming this weekend, and there'll be three performances, right?
Right, so there's a chamber orchestra Saturday night, I believe a brass ensemble in the afternoon Saturday, and then another small group concert on Sunday afternoon. And I, again, decided to unbundle, since I play in an orchestra anyhow, I decided to focus on small groups. That's where my passion is right now. I really love quartets, quintets, sextets. So I'm in another quartet with a different pro coaching us this time. And we're playing this Sunday afternoon. It's part of Artscape, so if the weather's not bad or if it's too hot, people can just come in out of the heat into the air-conditioned Meyerhoff Hall, and it's all free.
Amy Nathan, are there a lot of learning opportunities like this across the country for amateur musicians, or is this unusual?
The Baltimore program is probably the biggest, and it is pretty unusual because they have both this program in the summer, and they also have, I think, a few times a year, the Rusty Musicians program is more of a one-day program, as I understand it, where you can go and play with the orchestra. But some other professional orchestras are doing this. The Detroit Symphony has started its own community orchestra. The Pacific Orchestra in California has something called OC, Will You Play With Me? It's in Orange County. Maren Alsop was really the prime mover into getting the Baltimore Symphony amateur programs going. And it was a program that she had done when she was a conductor in the UK as well. And there's just a new one that I just found out about. The Berlin Philharmonic started something called the B-Phil, where people from around the world could send in their audition pieces, and they just performed just last month, I think it was, or maybe it was in May, conducted by the Berlin Philharmonic's conductor.
It sounds pretty intense.
And fun. I mean, they just are having a ball.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Amy Nathan about her new book, Making Time for Making Music. Liz Sogg, who lives in Lutherville, is a data specialist in Homewood Student Affairs at Johns Hopkins University. She'll be playing when Amy Nathan discusses the book at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road on July 28th, a week from Saturday. Amy, many of the musicians you profile are older. Did they tell you they are more susceptible to being injured in playing?
Well, I don't think they're any more susceptible, but they have the ailments of age, you know, arthritis and failing eyesight, things like that, and that they just have to adjust to. I interviewed healthcare professionals who work with musicians who gave really good practical advice for how to not overdo it in your practicing. One rule of thumb was never practice for more than 25 minutes at a time. Take a break. It's called the Pomodoro Method, which is named after a tomato-shaped timer that a graduate student in Italy was using. Pomodoro is Italian for tomato. Often amateurs don't have much time to practice during the week because they have to make dinner, like Liz was talking about, or they have jobs and they have kids have to be put to bed. So sometimes they overdo it on the weekends, and it's the weekend warrior syndrome.
I asked Max Weiss, the cellist who is editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine, whether she gets jitters when she performs, and she said yes, and they help her focus. And she described how she copes with them.
One thing that I always tell myself, and this really helps me when it comes to performing, is I love music. And what I'm doing right now is I am sharing my love of music with an audience. So if I think of it as this sort of partnership between the cello and the piece that I'm playing and the people I'm collaborating with and the audience, and that we're all sort of here to have this experience together, that kind of calms me down. But I like to have that little teeny bit of an edge because it gives you that hyper-focus, which is when you do your best playing, hopefully.
Liz, how do you cope with performance jitters?
Well, it's very important to stay in the moment. You know, you can't start letting your mind wander, feel like you're having an out-of-body experience watching yourself play. So that's step one. And then step two is to think about the people playing with you and the overall sound that you're producing, your overall balance. You're constantly adjusting for your balance. Yeah, and string players typically have a probability of landing on the right correct note. So we're constantly adjusting to hang a little sharper or a little flatter, to be well-tempered, to blend with our fellow musicians. It becomes about the overall musical phrase, the overall musical balance, the intonation, where you're going with the piece. Are you conveying what you're trying to convey, whether it's a stormy edginess of some of the minor pieces or whether it's a nice gavotte, a breezy gavotte, or some sort of dance that you're playing? And that's really what I do. It's a combination of staying focused and then also thinking about all of the music going on around you.
What do you get out of music, out of performing? Why is it worth it to you?
Oh, it's just, music is one of the most beautiful fabrics in our universe. Music is a reason in and of itself. So I'm happy to just be able to join in to play pieces that were composed hundreds of years ago and that are still just some of the finest works of art. And so I'm happy to be a participant. I just love it.
Amy Nathan, what sticks with you as we wrap up? What sticks with you from all the comments you got from musicians about why they do it?
Well, they said over and over again that it makes them feel peaceful. It gives them calmness, that there's something about playing music. You really have to be focused on the music while you're practicing or while you're playing. And day-to-day worries are banished from your mind if you're truly focusing on the music. And that's kind of a wonderful experience in our very busy world to have this time when you're really focusing on something completely different and you totally immerse yourself in it. And that's because music really is a multitasking enterprise. I mean, you are doing physical, you're doing mental, you're doing emotional, you're reading the music if you're using a score. And so you're using all different parts of your brain. And so it really is an all-encompassing experience. And there's something very calming about that. A fellow that I interviewed in Chicago, who's a software developer, said that he plays guitar. And for him, a guitar is a friend who's always there for you.
Well, thank you both for talking to us about it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Well, thank you for having us.
Amy Nathan's new book is Making Time for Making Music, How to Bring Music into Your Busy Life. She'll be talking about it a week from Saturday, July 28th, 6 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road. Violinist Liz Sog, a Johns Hopkins data specialist, will play at that event, as will violist John Warshawski, who has a bar exam to pass before then. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we'll link to information about the book and the Ivy event, as well as the performances at Artscape this weekend, the BSO Academy Brass Band concert Saturday afternoon, the BSO Academy Chamber Orchestra concert Saturday evening, and the BSO Academy Chamber Music Ensemble concert Sunday afternoon. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.